Well, today I've got a special guest to be visiting with. The Honorable Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is joining me on the telephone. And Governor, let's talk about some of the things that are coming about. And we'll start with from yesterday's news conference, or Thursday's news conference, when your Economic Recovery Advisory Board had submitted their report. And one of the first things right out of the bat, and of course something that's of your personal goal, is to expand broadband throughout all areas of Iowa. How are we going to do that? And more importantly, how are we going to finance that?
Yeah, well, you know, luckily Iowa's in a much better place than a lot of the other states across this country. We entered into COVID-19 and 2020 with our fiscal health strong, and that really allowed us to absorb some of the economic impact that COVID has had on this country. And so because of, you know, keeping 80% of our economy open, and because of our diversity of our economy, the tenacity of Iowans, we're able to, you know, our cash reserves are full, we have a surplus, and we're, as I said, heading into 2021 in a good place. And so we talked about, you know, because we are in a big place, we're moving ahead with hope and confidence, and we're tackling big issues, and one of those is broadband access. And I think if 2020 has showed us anything, it's the importance of having high-speed, reliable internet, and because of telework, telehealth, telelearning across the board, and especially in rural Iowa, we're not anywhere where we need to be. Iowa has the second slowest speeds in the country. We're just behind Alaska. That's unconscionable. We have a third of our counties that are still in broadband deserts. They don't even have 25.3, which is a minimum. And so if we're going to be competitive, if we're going to help rural Iowa grow, and if we're going to be able to take advantage of the innovation that we saw take place in 2020, then we need to have that capacity. So my budget calls for $150 million for a year for the next 3 years that will leverage millions of dollars of private investment. It helps them, our private sector, make the math work to go to some of those less populated areas, the last mile we refer to, and to help increase the speed so we have the latency for businesses to locate not only in urban areas but rural Iowa as well. And so what we're able to do is to take advantage of some of the federal funding that's coming in and to use that one-time money and to put it into infrastructure and not putting it into ongoing programs where when they take that money away, then we're left with a big hole and trying to figure out how we maintain that level of spending going forward. So it allows us to use some of the dollars coming in to do it in a thoughtful manner and to invest heavily in infrastructure that will benefit the entire state and Iowans, make us competitive, help us grow our economy. And it'll be the biggest build-out in the country if we're able to do this. And Dennis, just the last thing, because I'm very passionate about this, because it's just it will help so many areas. Every other state is doing it, so every other state is doing the same thing that we're trying to do here in Iowa. We're starting at a deficit, and so we're going to have to invest big and bold to not only catch up, but to exceed what other states are doing.
Now, many people I've had the chance to talk to equate the introduction of broadband internet throughout the rural areas of Iowa, throughout all of Iowa, they kind of go back to about the turn of the century when we had the rural electrical cooperatives, you know, put in electrical wiring and telephones and all that type of thing across the entire state. You kind of look at this as being on that same level, that same importance, what we had many, many years ago, that now today we've got this new technology that we want to try and incorporate in all areas of Iowa?
Yeah, I completely concur with that. And, you know, if you look at rural Iowa, that's where the deserts are at. And so it is now a utility and communities. It's like water and electricity. And if they don't have that connectivity and they don't have the speed and the broadband depth, then they're not going to be able to compete. And we're certainly not going to be able to keep young people in our rural communities. The other thing is, you know, we do have a lot of our state agencies that have successfully worked from home throughout this pandemic, and some of our agencies are going to continue to offer that opportunity, which means I can go outside of the metro area to find talent to help work in some of our state agencies. So that also allows me to tap into talent in every single corner of the state if they would be interested in working in one of our state agencies. So I like that component too. But if we don't have, again, the connectivity and the speeds that we need, that's not an option.
All right. Let's shift gears here a little bit, Governor. Obviously, the vaccinations have started. And from what you've indicated in your news conference, that over 200,000 vaccinations have been distributed to Iowans so far. But as you've acknowledged, and it's becoming more and more frustrating for many people, particularly seniors, is that, well, there's a higher demand than there is a supply right now. And we've been shortchanged on the number of dosages that we've been promised to have. And I also know of some situations, particularly in some rural areas, I've heard in like Ida County and around Ida Grove, where senior citizens had gone and had to wait in line for two and a half, 3 hours, only to find out that there wasn't enough dosages there for everybody, and they became more frustrated and everything. So what, if you will, kind of share with us as to what you and your staff are doing to try, and along working with the Iowa Department of Public Health, and trying to make sure that everybody is getting the vaccinations that we need to have.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a supply issue, first and foremost. And every single state is grappling with that same issue. We just need more vaccines, and we're honing the process, and we believe we'll be able to get them administered. We put new metrics in place that all of our providers have to meet, and if they can meet the 100% administered, I think it's between 80 and 100, I think they should be able to get 100 administered with what they're allocated, then we can continue to get Iowans vaccinated and do it in a timely manner. But, you know, just this week, prior to February 1st, we were only receiving 19,500 doses. And, you know, I have about over 500,000 Iowans that are 65 years and older. And so, you know, that's just, you know, run the numbers there. It's just simple math. So beginning this week, those doses have up to 45,300. That's still a small, small number with the numbers of Iowans that we need to get a vaccine to. We were able to talk to the long-term care facilities and reallocate some of the doses that they hadn't used. So we had an infusion of about 64,000 doses this week from them. But the bottom line is, I mean, our allocation is just limited going forward. And so we're trying to manage that. We're trying to look for opportunities where we can do some large-scale clinics. We're trying to put in place a scheduling apparatus that will make it easier for seniors so they're not waiting in line. Our retail pharmacy program starts next week, and that's Hy-Vee and a lot of Medi-Cap and our smaller pharmacies and communities across the state. And they'll be getting allocated about 10,000 a week, and so they will also have the ability to reach out to seniors and schedule so we can avoid the wait lines, and people will know, you know, they will have a slot, so they'll be able to go in and be guaranteed an opportunity to get the vaccine. So we're working on it. Really what we need is to see more doses come into the state, so I hope the Biden administration really focuses on that. I think, you know, they have upped it a little bit the last 2 weeks, so we're grateful for that, but we're a long ways from where we need to be.
Do you and Director Kelly Garcia have kind of a goal in mind, a date that you hope to see everybody across the state of Iowa and all demographics of and everything be vaccinated?
Well, we run models based on the number of vaccines that we get from the from Washington, D.C., but it's all based on our allocation. And right now, when you think of the number of Iowans that would be eligible to receive a vaccine, it's going to take a long time if we don't up our numbers from about 60,000, you know, a week. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. I think that will happen. You know, Johnson & Johnson applied for authorization yesterday, I think. So they're talking about them being probably approved maybe later this month, 1st of March. That's a single dose. That'll be really helpful. And then as we continue to add, our manufacturers continue to streamline their process and their ability to produce more vaccines and get them out, that'll be helpful. AstraZeneca is also in the, you know, line ready to, you know, waiting to be approved also. So it's incredible to think that in like 10 months We have two vaccines that we're administering right now. A third one is probably coming on in March, and a fourth one, hopefully sometime in March, April, will be added to the mix. So all of that is good news for, I think, not only Iowans, but Americans across the country and our ability to get those that want it a vaccine. So if we get it, we're going to get it in the arms of Iowans. We're not sitting on it, and that's my message to any of the providers that are getting a vaccine. We want you to help be a partner in this, but if I allocate vaccine to you, then my expectation is that you get it administered, that we're not sitting on doses. We cannot be because we have such a limited supply. So I want to be able to say to Iowans, we received this much, and this much has been administered, and this many Iowans have been vaccinated. And then we also have, like, the second dose coming in that's a part of the equation as well.
All right. Just a week ago, you had signed into law the bill that was passed through the Iowa legislature calling for schools to have 100% in-person classes. And, you know, we're looking at about only, 15 schools that do not comply with that particular provision. And I was wondering, it's been a week, and I know that the deadline is calling for them to go back into classes by February 15th. Have you had much pushback? And I guess I'm really especially interested in Des Moines and Waterloo schools. They, of course, are the larger ones that are not having in-person classes. Have you had much pushback, or what comments have you heard from those school districts after you've signed a bill into law?
Yeah, well, I haven't. I think maybe Waterloo has already made the recommendation to go to offer 100% in person. I think they saw, you know, the legislation that was working its way through the legislature. And I tell you, I mean, the vast majority of our school districts and schools figured out a way to get the kids back in the classroom safely and responsibly, and I am so, so, so grateful to that. This really was a grassroots organization. It was moms of kids that hadn't been in a classroom for, you know, 10 months, and they saw the impact that it was having on their children. And even a lot of the moms that I talked to, you know, they had the financial means to get a tutor or to help their child, you know, continue to do everything to maintain where they were at. But socially and emotionally, they still said it had devastating impact on their children. But they were really concerned about the number of parents and the single moms that didn't have the financial means to, you know, help make sure that their children were somewhat caught up. We were concerned about the rigor of the curriculum. The online is just not working. Kids had a lot of free time on their hands. I heard a lot of them, the most that they were online, or the curriculum was either 60 minutes to 90, and that was it. Well, you know, I mean, that's just not even near sufficient to preparing these kids for next steps. So it's the right thing to do. The data, the science supports it. The CDC came out yesterday and even said, you know, vaccination is not a prerequisite to get teachers back in the classroom safely. We can do this. There's data and science supporting it. And we need to put the child first and think about the impact every day that they're not in school. They suffer and they lose ground, and that should be in the foresight of how we move forward. And most importantly, we can do it. We can do it safely and responsibly.
Okay. Let's go back to your condition of the state address. I noticed, with the exception of mentioning about the derecho and the damage that it caused to many grain our crops and also grain storage facilities, you did not really mention Iowa agriculture, and I guess I'm wanting to let you have an opportunity now to maybe, you know, talk about Iowa agriculture, how we can recover not only from the derecho, but we've had some, various different, whether it be COVID and the meatpacking processing facilities have been shut down or reduced processing, but all in all, there's been a lot of setbacks to Iowa agriculture, and I wanted you to address that and to see what we can do to kind of get agriculture back on track.
Yeah, so, you know, that has been a priority throughout all of this, and I said, you know, I appreciate not only the administration but Secretary Perdue and then the CARES funding that we had made available to us, and with that, you know, I was able to allocate over $110 million into agriculture. We did Beginning Farmers. We helped with the Renewable Fuel Infrastructure Program. We helped biofuel refineries stay up and open. We helped some of our producers that were facing with processing plants shutting down and a disruption to the food supply chain. We helped with some of the loss from that and the disposal cost. So, you know, we had a pretty wide-ranging ag program that we put together with CARES funding, and that was on top of, like, the CFAP that came from USDA and some of the programs that they've made available, whether it was COVID or whether it was derecho or drought-related, and they continue to be an asset for that going forward, too. And then I'd be talking for 2 hours if I talked about everything, and ag is so important, but I highlighted some of the things that we're doing. But we're doing a biofuel standard proposal that will really help build demand and help our soybean and corn producers and our ethanol and biodiesel refineries. We're also doing some, we're amending some of the beginning farmer tax credit language. We're expanding it, and we're expanding the individuals that can help support it. So we're doing some legislation to help our beginning farmers. And then a really significant piece on, as I said, biofuel standard legislative proposal that maybe at some point I can come back on and we can kind of walk through what that looks like. It creates an E10 standard and a B11 standard. I put more money to help our retailers who have done a great job, our fuel retailers throughout this pandemic, to help put additional money into the renewable fuel infrastructure program to help them when they're adding new pumps to make them E100 compatible. So we're really building that infrastructure for the future. And then we're doing some adjustments with the tax credit program to really, again, kind of drive higher blends. So it's a pretty comprehensive bill that we put forward, and we're excited to work with the legislature to see where we can go with that.
Okay. And on the legislature, I'll let you have the last word here, of course. What are you hoping that they are able to accomplish in this session? That they've got a good start. You've got both the House and the Senate are Republicans like yourself. What are some of your wish list things that you hope that the legislature will be able to pass this year?
Well, I said really by tackling big issues like broadband, child care, affordable housing, I think that really will set us up for economic prosperity for years to come. And then in addition to that, from what we've just experienced with this pandemic, and again, I want to highlight that most of our school districts across this state are doing a phenomenal job, but there are a few that are not. And if we have children that are trapped in a failing school district, I believe that they should have the option, regardless of the financial means, to provide a different option for their children if they're in a school that's failing. That's only about 5% of our schools. 95% are doing it right. But I just don't think it's fair if you have a child that's in one of those schools that because you don't have the financial means, you don't have a choice to help get him the remediation, to help get him the tutoring, or to put him in another school that can help bring them along and provide them the resources they need to be successful. So those are probably the three main ones I'm working on. We're always working on workforce and ag, who is agriculture. That's the backbone of our economy. So I'm really excited about the legislation that we've put forth to help grow and our role that we play in feeding and fueling the world.
All right. Well, Governor, thanks very much. And I will tell you that we have an ice cream cone ready for you if you ever
Woo-hoo!
Make your trip back up here to Lamar's again, you know. What was it, chocolate chip, I believe? Was that your favorite? Or
I love it. That's it.
Okay. So, Governor, thanks very much. We've been visiting with Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds.